Yeah, it's recorded live on the air.
Stop doing that.
Before we begin our next session, I should caution you that some of the content you will hear may be considered unsuitable for immature ears. So those of you that consider yourselves immature, well, you're already here to begin with. So be cautioned. This may not be the king's or the queen's English you hear in this session. Or even prince's English. Yeah, you'll understand. One face that you don't see here this year is a certain Ohioan who is always conspicuous by his height and his sound. George Zeller does send greetings here. He finally looked at the calendar a week ago and figured out he couldn't make it here this weekend. And the word crestfallen might serve appropriately. He really wants to be here. He loves coming here. And, of course, he's always a fixture at this next session. So we've already told him we're going to miss him. And if you know George, give him hell for not showing up. The good news for those of you that may know a bit about George, he had gone through a job change which has worked out to his favor. He's landed on his feet, and that's kind of one of the reasons he can't make it, is that he's in a new position and couldn't weasel his way out for the weekend here in Culpsville. So he does threaten to be here, of course, next year as well. The good news, and this is kind of one of the things that makes the fest so great, is that there's always people to step in and fill the breach. So George was able to get in touch with Chris Lobdell and John Fisher and the usual cast of disreputable, even better. Clandestine, unlicensed, and pirate broadcasts. So Chris and John are more or less in charge for the next hour or so, and they'll share with you what's latest, what's greatest, and whatnot in the wonderful world of pirate and clandestine radio. Let's get all of our system right now. 1, 2, 3. Arrgh. All right, guys.
Well, as you know, I'm not George Zeller. I apologize for that. Anybody out here have never met George Zeller? Any of you? One of my friends once described George as looking like Neil Young with crooked teeth. Don't tell George I said that. But anyway, that's George Zeller. But George is a great guy, and he's usually here, and has a great enthusiasm for pirate radio, and does the monitoring times, Ireland's column every monthly monitoring times. So he's a great guy, and we miss him, and I understand because of his job change that he wasn't able to make it out. And so he said, okay, Chris, it's all yours. So here I am, but John's going to help me out with a bunch of other guys here as well. All right, to get your handout, basically the handout is just a explanation of pirate radio, basically what pirate radio is, the different types of pirates, FM. These stations are usually low power and often located in the low end of the FM band. They could be anywhere. And they... What's that? NPR? Yeah. Sometimes there's just not room in the pirate band for FM pirates, so they sort of just find any frequency they can. A lot of them cater to minority groups, such as Haitians, the Haitian community, or the Hispanic community. Something that isn't represented on commercial FM that's missing, so pirates usually fill that bill, so to speak, that little niche. A lot of pirates now, especially in the Boston area, in the expanded AM band, we have a bunch of pirates at between 1610 and 1700 kilohertz. We have, in the Boston area, I think three or four stations that broadcast in Creole to the Haitian community. One is even in AM stereo, so shows you where the technology has come. So they're getting quite popular in the big cities. Also on FM, Janice Laws and Steve were down in Florida, in the Miami to Key West area on vacation, and they managed to tape some pirates off the FM band in the Miami area.
Do you have that ready, Janice? Yeah, can you play it to the microphone? She's got some examples, and the disclaimer is there might be some profanity here, so just you'll just have to cover your ears, I guess.
Well, here we are in Miami, listening to lots of pirates on FM. Here's one called The Prime on 93.5.
Graveyard what?
Huh?
Is that graveyard what?
The graveyard of number one. Who are you sure?
What?
You sure, Doc?
Yeah, graveyard number one, boy. We ruined this shit, boy.
Okay, I feel you, boy. Boy, they say it's all about the graveyard. Somebody tell me something. 786-290-0015.
You gave a cell phone number to call in.
I heard something about some eight ball, huh? Yo!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. That eight ball, man.
What do you ready to say, dog?
Mama Earth, man.
I'm the hottest DJ, got the suckers watching. They looking for the best prime beer. The dirty thing I smoke when it won't work, take a pop.
Them real players secret.
Ain't nothing but them
ballers keep.
I'm the number one DJ, Ryan, ain't no secret.
Rag on
they getting scared cause I came
back.
To put each and every station flat on their
back.
I'm on
another level.
Best believe it, just
got
ain't trying to work.
Rob me.
Shoot them with the damn. Put the ass in
there. Now.
You tune to the best of the
crowd
now. Your ass won't make it.
Now.
Tonight the prime go.
Lead up.
Where's that night, man?
Games,
sell all the bay, that's where it's at.
Oh,
Dollar Big Birthday Party.
It's about
playing
games, ho. It's about that money
you make. 786-290-0015.
It's about the life.
I'm looking at number one hood.
You're going
to be
the
number one
hood.
You know what's riding with the prime.
All right, so that gives you an idea. When we were in Miami Beach on the FM band, we heard at one time 15 FM pirates playing all up and down the band. And a lot of them were from ethnic minority, you know, groups, Haitians and, you know, other Hispanic groups. And, I mean, they don't have access to the airways. And also the explicit nature of hip-hop that you can't air, I mean, all this stuff was, like, full of profanity, like, up and down the bands. It was pretty easy to tell if it was a pirate because the F word was pretty prevalent. The MF and F and, you know, N-I-G-G, whatever, and basically the local hip-hop ebonics were very prevalent, so they were easy to find, and very good signal strength they had. Yeah, the high power there. How high power were they, honey? Because we could hear them for like 20 or 30 miles inland. And
wow.
all around Miami, yeah. And just you know, call-ins and just incredible stuff. So that was an
great
example. I've got lots more of it. Maybe I'll play it during the listening hour.
Yeah, Janice can play some more of that stuff. During the listening lounge or whatever. But it's interesting stuff. And I guess Miami is full of them. But I'm not sure about other cities. Some cities have. I'm sure all cities have some FM pirates, the larger ones.
So they made it a felony too. It's 5
years. Yes. Yeah. In Florida, I think they passed a state law that makes it a criminal. Is that what it is, John? It's now a criminal
felony. Over 5 years.
The local police can now get involved in enforcement.
So it's not just the FCC now, it's the local police.
And they're handing it off. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And good luck of them fighting it, because in all these, you know, neighborhoods, real bad neighborhoods.
Yeah, so when you go into these neighborhoods, you got to watch out.
Yeah, I don't think that people, that's what the FCC doesn't want to go
down. FCC doesn't want to go down there without some federal marshals that are armed or whatever, the police, yeah. So that's happening. Yes, Greg.
The law is a third-class felony, and it's not for illegal operations. It's interfering with another licensed broadcast, and that's what they're doing. In fact, the ARRL, I think, is fighting it, because that means amateur radio operators, if they have a case of TBI, they're looking 5 years in jail for a case of a TBI where a receiver is poorly designed.
That's where I think the law could be challenged on constitutional grounds. Isn't it the FCC's jurisdiction, not the state, to enforce the radio spectrum, right, John? So it probably will go to court.
Yeah, in fact, that's the Radio Vermont.
And they'll throw it out eventually, you know.
The little Vermont pirate that got busted down.
Radio Free Brattleboro, is
yeah.
it? Yeah, in Brattleboro, Vermont.
That was what the FCC was using as that why they could bust it, because it was interstate commerce and they could control it because the locals wanted that station.
Right, right, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how the courts deal with the Florida law, and hopefully it'll be thrown out because it is really a federal government jurisdiction, the FCC, not a state's jurisdiction. Okay, let's go on. My field of expertise, anyway, is shortwave pirates. Many of you most know the current frequencies for shortwave, 6850, 6875. The crystal ship is down there, and WHYP, WHYP relay service, they operate in that area in AM a lot. 6925 has been the frequency of choice for many years now. It still is. 6950. 6955 still used occasionally. WMPR often operates on 6950. And a couple other pirates do. And of course, every now and then you'll see a pirate down at 90 meters. The crystal ship, I think, is down at 90 meters not too long ago.
Even
so.
On 1710.
1710, there you go, just above the expanded band, the high section. So you never know where you're going to hear a pirate, but these are the basic frequencies. And pirates are sporadic in nature, and they usually operate for only short periods of time, no more than an hour or so. Weekends, weekend evenings during the week. They're active as mostly weekend and weekend evenings. And sometimes during the day on Sunday and Saturday, Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings as well. As far as European pirates, they usually operate in 62 to 6400 range. And sometimes they can be heard in North America if you're on the east coast of North America. Some people have better luck than others listening to them either in the late afternoon on Saturdays, or they usually sign on around 08 or 0900 on Sunday mornings. And during the winter, during the darkness, when this is the dark period, some people do have luck hearing them. George Marotti is sitting right there. He's had some good luck with Euro pirates when conditions are good. And people like Dave Valco out in western Pennsylvania will go out into the wilderness with a long wire and listen, as well as Andy Yoder has done that as well. I don't, is Andy here this morning? Anybody see him? I don't see him around here, but he's had good luck with Euro pirates going out to a local ball field, setting up an antenna and listening and keeping the police away from him. So, what are you doing out there, you know? Listening to radio? Oh, really? Really? Sure. But he's had good luck, and we usually suffer from lack of interference here. I try to hear them, and John, we just have so much local QRN, it's difficult to hear them because the signals are so weak. But occasionally they come through, and sometimes they come through fairly well. On Saturdays we had Delta Radio, was it 6305 around 2100 last weekend. So you can hear them, it's just conditions have to be good. And
Mystery Radio
6220 frequency. Mystery Radio is probably one of the strongest Euro pirates, and sometimes they're on all night. They don't QSL, so we'll put out of it, right? that's another subject altogether, but anyway.
And this weekend, 90.5?
This weekend, what's going on this weekend? 90.5 is active as a pirate frequency?
88.9 and 91.5.
88.9 and 91.5?
If one were
to know such things. Are we going to hear the midnight ride of Pancho Villa? Does anybody know? So, midnight on Saturday. Try those frequencies. I don't know if there's going to be a shortwave transmitter going on at that time. Does anybody know? Nobody knows those things. But
VLF. Check your radio.
But what's that?
VLF
Oh, a very low frequency?
I heard a rumor there'd be something around 179 later.
179, long wave, huh?
Long wave.
All right, so if you have long wave coverage on your radio, try that.
Yeah. Pirate on 650 kilohertz, so I understand.
Oh, 650.
Yeah,
great.
Wow.
So we got all sorts of things going on, so that's great. That's great.
And there's always 74.
Oh, and 640 kilohertz, medium wave.
Jeez.
Really? 640 and 650?
It might be up later today, rumors.
Yeah.
Wow.
So great. There's lots of stuff going on the pirate band around here. That's super. And a brief mention of, most of you people know all this stuff, but for you new guys. Anyway, programming runs the range from kids playing radio, KPR if you want to call it that, to programs of rock, oldies like Sunshine Radio, to elaborate radio productions. We have twisted productions too, whatever. But the Undercover Radio is one of the current pirates that does some fairly complex and some nice elaborate productions. And in the past few years, there was Alan Maxwell, KIPM, did some great shows and has a whole bunch of great shows he did in the last five or six years. Although he hasn't been really active lately, there's been some relays of his stations, but I understand they have not been from him. So yeah, the programming runs the gamut, anywhere from just kids going on and fooling around to some really well done parodies. A Voice of Laryngitis was a station in the past that was very good. And WHYP and United Militia Pirate Bingo, all those sort of things have been in the past. Partial India Radio, yeah, not all India Radio, just part of it. And their QSLs are partial data, not full data, so they're around too. So you can hear all sorts of stuff on pirate radio. That's the fun of it. And you know, you can't get streaming pirate audio from pirate radio, so you do have to listen to the radio to hear them. Although there are internet pirates too now, I guess, that are popping up. I don't know much about them, but I guess there are some. Mail drops. The usual mail drops. We have John Arthurs in Belfast, New York. Andy Yoder, I think, still has box 109 in Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania. My box in Stoneham, Mass, box 146. And 293 in Merlin, Ontario, Canada. It's active. Box 69 in Elkhorn, Nebraska. And I don't know if the Huntsville one is still active. I listed it. Box 11. Halfway there. Yeah. Partial. It's a partial box. As far as pirate or email, it's like a lot of stations are now using email to contact their listeners. And, it's taken a lot of place of the mailboxes now, so they'll announce an email address during their show that you can contact them at. As far as resources, where to get information on pirate radio, we have the Free Radio Weekly. I've attached a copy of that here, so you can see just what that's all about. Greg Majewski, who's here, is one of the editors of the Free Radio Weekly, so if you want to ask him a little bit more about it, I'm sure he'd be glad to tell you. The Free Radio Network, www.frn.net, is big. It's very active. The last page is just a printout of one of the sections of that. You can go on and log into that and also register and post your own logins and information that you find. That's a great resource. I would recommend it to everybody out there. What's that?
Some pretty
hilarious discussions. Yeah.
Pretty fun.
Yeah. And as far as I do a column in NASA called the Pirate Radio Report. George Zeller has his Outer Limits column in Monitoring Times. And the X-ing with Cumbre or with Marie Lamb. Is Marie here?
Yes, I'm right.
Hi, Marie.
Hi.
She does a weekly show over WHRI and is it WMR too? WRMR, the World Radio Network, is that still on there too? Or?
Let's see. Yeah, the World Radio Network, that's on their English-European service.
The English-European service.
Yes.
So she does a DXing with Cumbre show, and I do a little 10-minute section called Pirating with Cumbre, which is part of that. So we have a little audio pirates and some information as far as pirate blogs and stuff. So all those are good resources. The unfortunate demise of the ACE, the Association of Clandestine Radio Enthusiasts. Unfortunately, that club went out of business this year. And I could get John Arthur up here just to say a few words about the ACE, because John was the ACE for many years, and we're sorry to see it go. You want to just say a few things, John?
Oh, it's a good run.
John's many. Anyway, I'll say a few words for John, because he's very bashful. But anyway, the ACE, when did it begin? The early 80s? 1982 it started, and it was basically the club for pirate radio in North America. In the mid-90s, and it was a large bulletin, had pages and pages of loggings and QSLs and articles on pirate radio. And it was a real great resource. All that along with the pirate pages. Andy Yoder did the pirate pages for many years, and that, I think, ended in the mid-1990s. And eventually, as some clubs dwindled, as the internet and computers took over, unfortunately, the membership just dwindled down to
How many members did you have at the end?
About 50 paying members.
About 50 members, and it just basically couldn't support itself anymore. So, unfortunately, it stopped publishing. So, but you're still active on the FRN, right? You still have your section, and that's where all the loggings are. It's part of the eighth logging section. What's that?
It's always really busy, and it's very current.
Yeah. It's pretty current, and it's up to date. So. And here's just a few. I could have listed 30 pages of pirates, and I didn't really have time because George backed out at the last minute. I would have done a little more, but here's some stations that were heard during 2005, just a listing of them. Channel Z, it's a new station. They have a small homebrew, what they call a Corsair transmitter, a little homebrew AM transmitter, and they have been heard with relays of WNKR from England and also some of their own programming. Ground Zero Radio with Bertha Turtle and some of the propaganda films from the nuclear fallout films from the 1950s. The Crystal Ship, he was very popular back, I think, in the 1980s. And he returned a couple of years ago and is still active. He has a great QSL, yeah. The Crystal Ship has a really nice QSL. If you do hear him, I'd suggest you send them a reception report because it's well worth getting the QSL. KIPM, Alan Maxwell, although I have a fairly close source that I email with him, he says these broadcasts that have been in the last year have not been from him but been relays by other people, but interesting programming just the same. Sunshine Radio, the Sunshine Radio lady, continues to play her oldies, telling listeners that she hopes you enjoy the music. And of course, she's in love with Grass Cutter Man, the Grass Cutter Radio. So, Take It Easy Radio, the Desperado broadcast music talk, and is generally supportive of the Bush administration. So, it's a right-wing pirate, but anyway. Undercover Radio, Dr. Benway sends out great QSLs, nice T-shirts, CDs. He's a very listener-oriented, great station. WNPR station likes to play techno instrumental music, and their IDs are computer generated, and they usually are a little bit over modulated on the AM band.
Slightly, right?
WHYP, where would we be without the James Brown Yard Memorial Station? Tell me.
That's the funniest pirate.
One of the funniest pirates around, and they've been around since, 1996 or 1997. Great stuff.
Very creative.
You hear people like Uncle Schleckstein, which is Bozo's uncle. The Gay Ghost, Lee Reynolds, all sorts of interesting stuff. So. I won't get into what that's all about, but you just have to listen to the show. It's some funny stuff and interesting stuff to say. So let's see. As far as FCC enforcements, does anybody know of any shoreway pirates that were busted last year? I don't know of any. Yes, Craig?
Actually, busted been almost all FM.
All FM, yeah.
There have been very little enforcement actions against shortwave pirates. I would say there's more shortwave enforcements against amateur radio operators who don't necessarily.
Yeah. I haven't heard of any shortwave busts in 1998. There were like five of them. And
yeah.
Maybe there was one.
Down after
after 98, I think it's died down. There hasn't been much activity busts on the shortwave bands. Like the Miami area, there's a lot of enforcement in Florida, but they just keep popping up as soon as they send them down. So really haven't been anything there. So I'm going to give up the microphone and have John say whatever he wants to say.
I really don't have anything to say.
You don't have anything to say?
No.
You want to talk about your favorite pirate station?
No.
Yeah. Alan, would you like to say something about pirate radio? You're here, so. Please, I'm sure I get you to say something, right? Come on up. Talk about pirate radio or FCC enforcement or whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, I know the FCC is, they're not busy chasing me anymore. So I know they're real busy in the metropolitan areas with the FM pirates, which is probably good for the shortwave pirates. But I don't know, the nature of pirate radio seems to have changed since the days when I was flicking on transmitters without permits and whatever. And it'll probably continue to change, which is actually good. I always felt that the FCC should have taken the upper end of the AM broadcast band from 1600 to 1700 and just give it to anyone who wanted it, like an amateur broadcasting band. So in a lot of cities, that's happening now. Mostly ethnic pirate radio is what you're hearing a lot. Boston's got like a dozen FMs. And in the New York City area, I know there's a few medium wave pirates that are working at like 1710, 1720 with a lot of mainly ethnic programming, Jewish programming, Haitian programming. But it's a need that needs to be filled, and there's just, you know, I know there was the low power FM, but that got all debacled up by the NAB because they were getting real nervous that there'd actually be some creative FM radio out there. So, of course, you know, tooting my own horn a little bit with WBCQ, which the FCC regards as the nation's first licensed pirate station. The interesting thing is lately I've been getting anonymous emails, like from Dr. Benway of Undercover Radio, who's coming back on our station. He'll be, I think, beginning in a week or so, he'll be on the air on 7415 from 2 to 3 p.m. on Sundays, which is, at that time, from where we're located, is good East Coast coverage. And I want to bring this point up that WBCQ is very friendly to pirate radio operators from the point of if a pirate radio person wants to get their program relayed over WBCQ, of course, through the magic of email, we'll do it anonymously. Generally, when we sell time to a client on our station, we generally have a contract in a form, and we know who the person is, and we have, you know, a phone number and mail drop. But for free radio people, we'll do special stuff. First of all, I'll give them a special rate that I wouldn't give, because I got to charge something. Running a 50 kilowatt transmitter now, electric bill went up 30% this winter because of the fuel, and it's killing me. My electric bill every month is now in five figures. It costs a lot to pump out 50,000 watts, and what they're charging for the electron pressure now is just getting crazy. But free radio people, if they contact WBCQ, just go to our website, WBCQ.com. We'll, you know, make a special rate or situation for you, find a time, and get you on the air. Because it works for us, and it works for the free radio operator where, you know, obviously they're probably not going to stop doing that and turning on transmitters without licenses. But if they come on BCQ, they'll get a 50 kilowatt signal. They can promote, you know, they can, because we're a free speech station and we do not censor anything about what people want to say on the air. And they can promote their own station or whatever. So I'm kind of throwing that out because I still love the fact that people are out there not afraid to turn on a transmitter. And, you know, what you brought up, Chris, about the FCC hasn't busted any shortwave pirates, and there are reasons for that. First of all, most shortwave pirates are operating on, like, the same frequency band. It's kind of like they've claimed that, you know, near 40-meter segment and said, well, this is it, like 7415 used to be.
Right.
And they've claimed that if you keep the signals clean, you know, no splatter, and don't ever interfere with any public service or, you know, let the signal bleed over into a police scanner or anything like that, you can operate for years without raising any eyebrows. Generally, what's always gotten free radio operators in trouble is somebody dimes them out, which happened to me in the past. You cause interference. Your signals get picked up by the control tower at an airport. You know, and a complaint goes down to Washington. Once a complaint is filed, they got to do something about it. And the other thing is, they're real busy with the FM pirates now. That's why that legislation in Florida, because they're going crazy down there. I mean, all the local licensed broadcasters don't know what to do. And I can't, you know, I blame the FCC for it, because that's what radio is supposed to be. There's supposed to be a way where, especially in a tight-knit community, you know, different groups can get on the air, and it's very difficult. Even with the expanded FM band, it's a difficult thing. So there's always going to be free radio. There's always going to be pirate radio. The only advice I can give after done it and being busted and handcuffed and thrown in jail over it and all that stuff, use your head, be careful with it, don't interfere. Of course, I'm not advising anyone to go out and break the law, but it's still what we are. I mean, it's still, to me, in many ways, free speech and free expression. That's why I built WBCQ, because I put that station on the air to give individuals a chance to get on the air with a lot of power, express themselves, and not have to, look over their shoulder, worry about getting busted, because when you get busted now, it's like a minimum $10,000 fine. And the worst thing that they can do, and they still do this, is they get a court order and they come into your house and they take everything. They take every piece of electronic equipment that's even remotely connected to anything. I mean, no, they will. If the blender is in the studio, right, and you were just mixing up a daiquiri or something, they'll take that. I mean, they'll take everything.
Tape recorders.
And, you're not going to do any jail time, but they will slap a fine on you. They'll take the whole record collection. They'll take everything. And you can avoid it just by being cool and, being clean, and don't interfere with anything, especially of a public service nature now. In fact, I think they got some guy that was pirating, on the ham bands and interfering with public service and stuff, and they're going to throw the book at him. I mean, he's going to jail. I mean, I was just reading about him a week or so ago. And any questions?
Chris, there was somebody by the name of Alan Weiner who used to be rumored to be a pirate.
Yeah.
Now, when you applied for a legitimate license for BCQ, did you have a difficult time with the FCC? How did they treat that?
It took me 13 years. They basically said that I was Captain Hook, and Captain Hook is not going to get a license. It took me 13 years to get BCQ, to get the license for it. It took one attorney, and has anybody ever heard of a fellow by the name of George Jacobs? Is that name?
Yep.
George Jacobs is like the grandfather of modern shortwave radio. He is the guy that told the commission when WRNO was, when Joe Costello, does anyone remember Joe Costello? When Joe Costello was building, was trying to get WRNO on the air back in the early 80s, the government was saying, no, we're not going to give out any more private shortwave licenses because we don't have to and we don't want to do it. And George Jacobs was the one that went before the hearing with Joe Costello and reminded the FCC that there is something called a constitution, that individuals in this country have a right to be licensed for a public resource like shortwave radio. And he convinced the FCC, basically by reminding of the laws of the land, that Joe Costello has to be given a shortwave license. So the way that George described it to me, this is just a little aside tidbit, is that at the hearing, the commission basically threw the papers at Joe Costello and said, okay, here's your license. So WRNO got on the air, and the WWCR, which was kind of in that, they were also trying to get licensed at that time. So George Jacobs was kind of like brought in the second coming of commercial shortwave radio in this country. And George was kind of like took me under his wing. He was blunt. He said, the FCC thinks you're Captain Bligh, but, we're going to try. We're going to try to get you licensed. And he spoke with a lot of the commissioners. He spoke with a lot of the people back in 1997 and 1998. And finally, in 1998, we got a license to build WBCQ, but it took a long time. And it basically took George Jacobs. Sometimes it's not only how you fill out the forms, it's a little bit who you know. It took George to tell the commission, no, Mr. Weiner's not a bad guy. He doesn't have horns. He just wants to get on the air. And he'll get on the air, and he'll stay on frequency, and he'll abide by the rules and regulations. And my lawyer said basically the same thing, and my lawyer also reminded them that after a certain period of time, which is 10 years, like if you're bad at the FCC, if you do something bad, like they catch you, you know, doing some heinous thing, whatever it may be, pirate radio or whatever, there is a time limit. It's 10 years. After 10 years, your record is expunged, and then if you come before them for a license or whatever, they can't revisit what you did back 10 years ago. So that took into play also, and my lawyer reminded them of that, and they said, okay, we'll give them a license. And I remember I was on like double secret probation for 6 months or so. No, really, really. And you know, every time I talk to George, actually the FCC has been very, very, very good to WBCQ. When we have a frequency change or we put in a new antenna system, they've been very friendly. They've been very good to us. And they haven't been bothering us about our content or anything that we've said on the air. I mean, we've had a few, you know, I've had the FBI call us, I've had the Secret Service call us, I've had the State Department call us, you know, about some of our programmers and things. But the FCC has been taking a hands-off regarding our program content, and some of our programs get really heavy. And they've been good about it, so in all fairness, they've been okay. But to answer your basic question with all these aside stories, it took a long time, but it finally happened. Any other questions?
Well, with the government's position with the Patriot Act and, you know, the NSA surveillance of people, you probably know a little bit about the loss of Google maybe fighting
right now
for people's searches. I'm wondering if WBCQ were put in the position of being approached by federal enforcement authorities and saying, you know, we didn't like that program you aired last Thursday, and we want you to give us a recording, a file, a transcript of what you have so we can listen to it again and analyze it. I mean, what would be BCQ's position on that?
Well, I can't, you know, it's interesting. That's an interesting question. I can't see that happening, because anything we broadcast can usually be accessed one way or the other, because we have a lot of people that record every single piece of BCQ programming. Let me put it to you this way. If we've gotten phone calls from people that have wanted shows, and mostly what I do is, depending on how I feel, where it's coming from, I'll say, well, we don't record our programs and we don't provide that information. I mean, I'm like any other person in the media. I will protect my sources. I will protect a person's free speech right to express themselves. You know, through my lawyers, I would defend anyone's, you know, privacy or rights within the law. If something like that happened, I would probably pick up the phone and call my attorney and find out, you know, because as a licensee, I have to be careful with that, because I can't play around with the station's license. I have to find out what my obligations are, if I can basically tell them to go take a walk or whatever. I have gotten calls from the FBI and the Secret Service and the State Department, at least people that have claimed that they were from those agencies. And most of the questioning was about the programming, the times that they're on the air, how they get their programs to me. And generally, I just give name, rank, and serial number. Well, you can hear the program at such and such a time, on such and such a frequency, and that's it. That's what I do. I'm polite and I'm nice. But nowadays, you just don't know. You don't know. I do know that, because my consultants have told me this, that the State Department and other people, they listen to our station, they monitor the programs, they monitor what people have to say, especially some of our more controversial shows. But they do that with the other shortwave stations, too. And, you know, so far, any contact I've had from any official agency has been cordial and respectful. And as long as that's maintained, fine. If somebody calls me up and wants me to violate someone's privacy or their free speech rights or whatever, they're going to have a problem.
Just a suggestion. When you get a call from an official organization like that, it's a blind telephone call. Make the gentleman or lady give you their phone number, and you call them back after you. That will eliminate anyone trying to do social engineering or operating on the edge of their authorization.
Yeah, it's a good point. Luckily, the conversations have never gotten that deep where I'd have to like pick up the phone, call my lawyer, or get more information, because the inquiries on programs were so general that it could have been almost a listener doing it. So what I did was I just, as a businessman, I just remained polite and answered the questions, and that's it. I hope someday to see more pirates up. This is just my own thing. I hope someday to see more pirates operating in the upper end of the AM band. That there's not much activity there anymore. As I said, in some of the city areas you have that, but not too much. Any other questions that I might be able to answer? Yeah.
You think the frequency where pirates hang out is more controlled by availability of equipment, or is it because of the staying cool and keeping the FCC on the band?
Well, I don't know. I think pirates operate in those bands because they've been so well publicized that people, if they want to hear a pirate, they'll go to 6900s and start tuning around. And that's a utility frequency. It's not near the broadcast bands. It's relatively quiet. And as long, in all my experience with free radio, as long as you're not interfering with someone else, and whatever the free radio operator is doing does not generate complaints, generally you won't have a problem.
So why did they come down on you so hard?
Which time? I mean, I could go on forever. My first pirate stations, which were in the basement of my dad's house on AM and FM, we were running 300 watts AM and 250 watts FM. That was in the late 60s, early 70s. We operated for a couple of years. I'll tell you what got us busted then. The FCC was just taking a hands-off approach. It was the local ham radio club that pushed the Justice Department to bust us. Because the FCC was just, we were running a community station for Yonkers, New York, which had no local radio station. It was close to Manhattan, but there was no local radio station in Yonkers. And we had the support of a lot of people there. The FCC really didn't know what to do. But the local amateur radio club, which had a couple of guys running it that thought we were like communists and we were going to interfere with the DEW line, and I'm not exaggerating, this is what was printed in the paper. And they made it their sole mission in life to put us off the air. And, why they did this, I don't know. Maybe they just weren't big enough. I don't know what their problem was. But, that was the first time. Let me see, what was the second time? The second time was with when we took a station and put it on 1622 AM using an auxiliary broadcast frequency. They came down hard on that. And then, of course, when we put the radio ship off Long Island, New York, back in the 80s, they really didn't like that one. But the FCC actually got the State Department to make a mess of that. And we were never really charged or fined or anything for that, but that became such a financially difficult thing to litigate that we just gave up, and that's when I got into the shortwave thing, because the offshore was just not going to work off the coast of the United States. I don't care what license from what country you had or they're just not going to let it happen, because America rules the waves when they want to. They really, really do.
So they persecuted you even though you weren't interfering with someone else?
That is correct. That is correct. But we were operating big, we were on the air like 24 hours a day with lots of power, and we did generate complaints. Like in our New York days, a couple of the New York City stations were complaining about us, because they were afraid that we were going to start like a This again was in the late 60s, early 70s. There weren't many pirates on the air, especially on FM at that time. And in the New York City area, there were none. We were it. So there were a couple of FM stations. I think the ABC station, WPLJ, filed some informal complaints about it because they were getting nervous. But it's interesting that, you know, because I have all the records from the Freedom of Information Act, the FCC was not taking any real action. What really brought us down then was the local ham radio club. To this day, I can't figure out why they got all uptight about it. We weren't on their frequencies, and we weren't bothering anything with ham radio. Well, am I taking all your time?
No, that's fine.
Any more questions? Yeah.
So, as I recall, back after the radio ship incidents, in fact, the government was so unsure of their case, and there actually was no statute that you violated, that the only way they could figure out to make you stop at that time was to invoke a permanent restraining order.
Correct.
Against you and some of your associates.
Correct.
If someone were to try to do a similar thing today, in view again of, you know, Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and so on, what do you think the results would be today?
It depends. It depends who does it. And I don't mean to, you know, bring up like a political situation, but I'll tell you this: if someone took a ship out 3 or 4 miles, found a frequency that was clear, had it registered properly, had all their proper permits and what everything, and had Al Sharpton on board, or Jesse Jackson, I promise you, they would not run out there and scuttle that boat. They would listen. So it was just a confluence of crazy happenings. I don't know if there was anything we could have done on those offshore days to hold off a little longer. I know eventually, no matter what you do and no matter who you have on board, they would stop it, because it was such a, I mean, the commission really treated it as an incredible threat. Like, I think they felt that if we were successful, the whole country was going to be ringed by radio ships. And that just wasn't going to happen, because it's such a complicated, expensive thing to do. Yes?
Speaking of radio ships, back in those days, they were real popular in the UK and
yeah.
Europe. Were you in touch with those folks?
Oh, yeah, all the
time. And what did you learn from them, good and bad? Tell us a bit about Veronica.
Well, Ronan O'Rahilly was the founder of Radio Caroline, which was the most popular one. And Caroline was still on the air. And I called up Ronan, and I went over and spent a month there with him on board their ship. In fact, I was on their radio ship for about 3 weeks. Did a lot of engineering for them, installed new processors, redid their transmitters, spent the whole time getting to see what the scene was and how popular it was. And I learned quite a bit. And really, you know, there were, at that time when we were on the air, there were two radio ships operating, one off the coast of Israel, radio, you know, A.B. Nathan's boat, the peace ship, the Voice of Peace, and Radio Caroline. And I saw how they did it. I saw how they organized it. And it's funny, everything pointed to it being a lot easier to do here because we're such a nation of freedom. And, you know, you have a ship that's registered internationally in, you know, to another country in international territory. You're not illegal. You're not violating any FCC rules. In fact, when the FCC stormed my boat, I said to them, show me the rule. What have we violated? Well, I don't do that. I'm no attorney. You know, we're just, you know, the typical, we're just doing our job. And it's true what you brought up. When we were hauled into court, we were not being accused of violating the FCC rules and regulations. The charge that they got us on, which was later dropped because it was ridiculous, the charge was that we were impeding the proper functioning of the United States government, which there's a law written. No, there really is. There's a law written that there's a lot of that. I mean, there are rules and regulations where if you actively try to prevent the government in the United States from enacting their rules and regulations, or, you know, just running their government, it's punishable, and the fines are huge, and there's jail time. And So they used that to get our ship, and then they went on board and they, you know, wrecked everything. And they gave the boat back to us, and they said, ha, 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 ha. And, you know, I ran out of money. We had the ACLU defending us. Well, I don't want to even talk about that. But, and, you know, my attorney said, look, Alan, you can go out there 100 times. They'll find 100 ways of scuttling you and keep you in the courts until you drain. He says, you're not breaking any law, you're not illegal, but they don't want you there, and you're not big enough. You don't, you know, you're not Donald Trump. You don't have enough money to keep fighting and fighting and fighting over this, and that's why we canceled the project. But we were never, as I said, we were never formally arrested. There was no jail time. There was no fines. There was nothing. It was just we were. You know, the legal system was used against us, and because they just didn't want us out there, so that's it.
Great, thank you.
Oh, let me just, Ed has a question.
As you may have already answered this, but it wasn't totally clear. Has WBCQ ever been subpoenaed for information about any of its broadcasts or programming?
No, we haven't. Okay. I think we've come close, but I was able to thwart that off. No,
and haven't. These new Patriot Act letters where the FBI can subpoena you or a librarian or anybody for this information, and you are prohibited by federal law from even talking about it. I guess you couldn't tell us if you had been subpoenaed that way.
Only you would bring this up.
No, I'm not implying you were, and you can't talk about it. I'm just saying that situation exists now. And it's kind of
crap. Well, you know, folks, it's what I say on the air all the time. These are frightening times for liberty and freedom in this country. And I really feel that radio, free radio, underground radio, whatever, is probably going to be one of the last venues left that people will be able to get a different perspective. That's why pirate radio and free radio stations to me are very important, because you know, they're not government or controlled or owned by conglomerates or whatever. And, you know, these stations might be the last bastion of what the heck is really going on. So an informed citizenry can make their choices and hopefully get rid of these Patriot Acts and all this other Gestapo stuff, which is just eroding our freedoms. You know, what did Ben Franklin say? I mean, if you trade your security, liberties for security, you will have neither. You'll have none, and we're seeing that. So long live free radio. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. I'm not sure if we have much else. We'll have some questions and answers. There was some question of what the difference between pirate radio and clandestine radio is. And I think clandestine radio is usually usually a political in nature type thing. It's usually a government broadcasting to its country, which is hostile to the government, like a dictatorship or someone trying to overthrow a country or something like that. It's usually political in nature, like there's radio. Pardon me? Sure. John would like to say something.
Yes. This is just a quick comment on clandestines. There's one that's been on the air. I think on the weekends you can hear. I don't have the time off the top of my head. 11805. It's Voice of the People from Zimbabwe. And I've heard them a couple of times at my place in Massachusetts. Fairly decent signal. This station was set up by former people of the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation who weren't happy with what the government in that country was doing. It's being transmitted over the Radio Netherlands transmitter in Madagascar. The station about 3 or 4 weeks ago was raided by the police. The studios are in Harare in Zimbabwe. It was raided by the police. Everybody was arrested. I got an email from the station saying the station closed down, equipment destroyed by Zimbabwe police, director arrested. I read within the last couple of days the trials taking place, and the first thing that the Zimbabwe government said is that the transmitter was broadcasting from inside Zimbabwe, when everybody in the country knows it was broadcasting from Madagascar. But that's just an example of where a government will feel that a clandestine is challenging its own authority. And Some of them are fairly easy to hear. I don't have the schedules with me, but I know Deutsche Telekom has a whole bunch of them aimed for Ethiopia, Eritrea.
Cameroon.
Yeah, there's one from the Cameroons. There's another one that's broadcasting something like the Diaspora of the Gambia. So they're out there. So that's all I really had to say on it.
Great, thanks. Well, we're getting close to the end of the forum. I didn't know if there's any questions in general in Pirate Radio that anybody wanted to ask. Feel free to. Yes?
Not so much a question, but a tip. If you want to hear a pirate radio station and you have access to the internet, go and monitor or watch the FRN Vines ACE page.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone blogs hearing a station, that's the time to tune your radio. And that's probably the easiest way, rather than sitting there listening to static as you turn up and down the band.
Good point. As I gave you a sample copy of the FRN, if you log into that and monitor what's being posted, it's almost real time. So if someone hears a pirate and they post it 5 minutes ago, it's probably still on the air. So it's a good way to log something that's currently on the air. And as Greg says, sitting and listening to static all afternoon can be a little boring. Yeah. And conditions haven't been the greatest after dark these days. There hasn't been a lot of activity due to the low sunspot number and the MUF being so low that things just aren't propagating. So as the days get longer, things will get a little better and conditions will be a little better to the evening. So, Alan.
Chris, I just wanted to add something. Tonight in room 412, I'll be doing my program, Alan Wiener Worldwide Live, from the Winterfest here on 7415. We're talking about pirate radio. If anybody wants to come up there and join us, get the chat about the state of free radio, what people are doing, what people are saying. And we're also going to be operating a Part 15. Long wave station.
Legal, of course, right?
Yes, of course. One measly, miserable watt on 187 kilohertz.
187, long wave then. Frank.
I would just make one comment. If there were to be any pirate radio operators in the room, which I'm sure they're not, that consideration ought to be given to EQSLs. Rather than paper ones. It's so much easier to set up a site that, for all practical purposes, is untraceable unless the government really gets into it. Doesn't identify your location. You fire out the EQSL, there's no expense on either side. And if one were to know, there is even a site up on the internet where these EQSLs have been published.
Yeah, EQSLs are becoming more popular now that pirate stations have email addresses. A lot of times they'll QSL with an attachment like a PDF or a JPG, and then you can print it out. And if it's a card, you can print it out on cardstock, and voila, you have your own QSL. Way back there.
One other useful aspect of the internet with regard to pirate and clandestine monitoring is the DX Tuners network, dxtuners.com. It's a website that allows people to access literally dozens of shortwave and VHF FM receivers around the world in amazing locations with amazing antennas that many of us just don't have physical space for. And you can remotely tune these radios and listen to the live streaming audio from them. You're tuning the radio. These aren't streaming broadcast stations. You can literally have access to dozens of receivers around the world with amazing antennas. There is a monthly fee, but I think it's reasonable. And if you put your own receiver online in the network, then you get free access to the network as long as your node is up. So it's worth checking out. There's going to be a demo in the next room later today.
Yeah, I was going to say, where can we get information on that?
DXTuners.com.
DXTuners.com.
It works remarkably well.
It's
even,
really great. I love it, too.
Even with a dial-up connection, if you have a 56K connection, you can even get decent audio from it that way. So if you don't have broadband, you're not out of the loop on it.
Great. Any more questions?
I had a question. I was just wondering, does the trend in pirate broadcasting and also clandestine, what's it like reflecting against the general state of shortwave? Are there more pirates in recent years? Are there less?
Yeah, their clandestines tend to go with the world instability, I think, with dictatorships and stuff like that. They're up and down. As far as pirates, I think the general trend has been down, wouldn't you say, John? There are less pirates in this decade than there were in the 1980s. And like from 1985 to 1996 or something was probably the biggest, most popular pirate era.
On shortwave, yeah.
Now on FM, I think it's a lot more now than there were before, but shortwave is less, I'm quite sure.
After the 98 bust, people got spooked for quite a long time.
Yeah, after 1998, people sort of got spooked.
On shortwave.
Tim Tron.
You know, one thing that nobody's discussed, from what I understand, there's a number of pirates rebroadcasting the Sirius satellite program of Howard Stern. The Sirius satellite radio is setting a very bad precedent because that's paid radio. So obviously they have Stern in their back pocket, and Stern is ranting and railing against the pirates. I say more power to the pirates.
Amen. Amen to that.
The more free outlets there are for Stern, the better.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. Any other questions? No, I guess that sort of wraps it up. I have some QSLs, some pirate QSLs over there on the desk, some of my collection, if you want to take a look. And, sure, why not? Go ahead. If you want to look at them, and there's some pirate radio directories that used to be published yearly by Andrew Yoder and George Zeller that I just looked over there if you want to take a look at them. Unfortunately, they don't have them anymore. I think it was a nice publication, but feel free to look at those. And. Scared of Scum? Is that the next forum at 1:30? And I think in the listening lounge we might have some more of Janice's tapes later on of the Miami Pirates. So thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lunch is next.